And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this venting edition of GGR with Derek Burns. And this is us breaking down a very disappointing 31-17 loss to the Purdue Boilermakers on the road. Another game that Minnesota had a lead in the third quarter and into the fourth quarter of this game. So two Big Ten losses for Minnesota. Both games they had chances within the final 120 seconds to pull it out, but they weren't able to do so. So we are going to vent, and I hope you are ready to listen. So joining me, as always, is my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive line great, the best X's and O breakdown man in the business for Golden Gopher football, Derek Burns. Derek, are you ready to start the venting?
I'm ready, guys. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
I think really, if the pre-production meeting had any indication, I think it's mostly Ryan Burns is going to vent. So prepare yourself. Let's start getting into this 31-17 loss by the Gophers. A game in which they led actually with about somewhere in between two and three minutes left on the clock, ultimately giving up a very quick touchdown and then pick six that ended the game. Okay, Derek, let's start on the when the Gophers are on defense. So, you know, we talked about against Maryland, you know, they really struggled against the spread, and we said it wasn't going to get any easier going against Purdue, who was even maybe more pass happy where they struggled. What did you see from the Gophers defense this week?
Well, I think we did see from Purdue what we thought. They're another spread passing offense, even less run called, you know, runs called than Maryland. I think on the positive side, the Gophers defense responded with better open field tackling. I think they did better getting to the ball. I think their pursuit was better. I think, you know, the linebackers and the secondary specifically, I think were challenged to, you know, to improve from one week to another. And I think they did that. And then specifically in the first half, another positive was really nice, some good reads and zone coverage. You know, the turnovers they were able to get, was good to see. They're really locking on to the quarterback, and they do have some freedom, which is kind of fun to see from the safety and linebacker position. They have some freedom at times to break their rule or break their assignment and go after the ball if they're reading the quarterback and they feel they can make a break on it. So those are the positives. I think where they really struggled was it was kind of a flip-flop from the Maryland game. They struggled in their assignments. They had some missed assignments. They had some difficulty diagnosing pre and post snap, some of the plays. Now, Purdue's an offense that presents that challenge. That's their game plan. That's their style, is they present multiple formations, lots of screens, tunnel screens, different route combinations. And so that can be difficult. And again, we have a lot of youth on defense. So I think that was an area that they struggled with, and specifically on some of the, it was disappointing on some of the long, you know, the real second and long, third and long, that they were, Purdue was able to bail themselves out with a lot of, you know, catch underneath and run, you know, for first down, even converted a couple runs.
I don't even remember what the question was at this point, but it's, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, against Maryland, Ryan, you know, you kind of harped on their inability to get pressure when the Gophers were on defense. You know, this game, they end up with, you know, four sacks and six tackles for loss. I mean, that has to be a marked improvement for them in this game.
It was in terms of, it was a tale of two halves for the defense, where in the first half, they give the offense the ball on a silver platter four different times. They only are able to score 14 points in that half, and it's incredibly frustrating. But you look at what the defense was able to do. I mean, they were flying around the field. They had four first-half sacks. You know, Carter Coughlin specifically, I thought, had a very impressive game from that rush end position. And it's the second week in a row where I thought that he's done a great job of getting pressure for a unit overall that outside of Steven Richardson from time to time is struggling to get pressure. So I like to see that out of Carter Coughlin. Obviously, there's a reason he was so highly thought of. It's because he is 6'4" with great burst off the edge. You know, I think ultimately they'll transition him back to linebacker next year when Jonathan Celestine departs. But Carter Coughlin is a rush end this year. He's playing the role that he's been told to play, where Minnesota needs him at most. And that's why you saw Minnesota so successful in the first half. It's not like they were absolutely shutting Purdue down, by the way. Purdue was still averaging 6 yards of play in the first half. It's just the fact that Kunle Ayinde reads a quarterback's eyes, jumps in front of it for an interception. We will talk about that with Connor Rota. There will be a lot of talk about that. But then Merrick Jackson gets his hand in on a fumble. Thomas Barber gets a gift where he brings the guy to the ground. The guy ends up fumbling it because I think he got hurt. But the more remarkable thing about that is Thomas forces the fumble. Like 5 seconds later, the ball's 10 yards away, and Thomas dives in it and recovers it. I mean, that's all about want and will there. And so that's very impressive to me. And then Kamal Martin playing off in zone coverage there. Reads the route. There was an out and up by the tight end there, which wasn't never there for David Blau to throw to because Thomas Barber was right there. But Kamal shows the athlete that he is, and he makes a fantastic interception. Now, when we look at the second half, it was rough. 25 points Purdue put up. Again, only 18 of those are against the offense because of the Connor Rota atrocious pick six at the end of the game. But their point remains that this defense was toasted through the air. And again, that's some of it's because of injuries. They allowed a 47% completion percentage quarterback and the backup quarterback to throw 14 of 19, which is 73% for 175 yards. And Kunle Ayinde drops a, what could have been a momentum changing interception, hits him right in the chest. It is. And it's tough for me to really point and look at Rob Smith and, give him a whole lot of crap because this secondary is in, I don't even know the words to describe it right now because you saw, if you haven't gone over, by the way, to the GopherIllustrated.com and checked out my GIF rewind, I have 40 different GIFs from this game. And I would encourage you to pause the podcast right now, go over, spend 15 minutes looking at all these GIFs, starting here because it's just, Coney Durr specifically, and I don't want to pick on the kid, and this isn't me picking on him, but he's not 100%. You can't tell me on that crossing route at the end of the game, if you watch that GIF, that is a player fully 100% ready for Big Ten game action because he's not. And the issue is if Minnesota is really not going to burn another red shirt, like Coach Fleck said after the game, Minnesota is going to get absolutely toasted in the secondary. Like you thought the last two games were bad. Coney's not ready to play. And why toss him out there if he's not? Because it's not helping Chenault. It's not helping Kunle Ayinde. It's not helping Jacob Huff. It's not helping this defense. Because Keandre Thomas has already been ruled out on the Monday of game week. That really doesn't bode well when you look forward to Illinois. If you're being ruled out the Monday before a Saturday game, that means you're probably a ways away. Antoine Winfield's already been ruled out as well. So this is a secondary that doesn't have a lot of bodies. At one point during this game, Minnesota was down to their last body in safety and at cornerback before they literally had to pull redshirts because they had walk-on freshman Calvin Swenson playing safety and nickel. And then Coney Durr is their last available cornerback on the entire roster without pulling a true freshman redshirt. And I don't know how Minnesota gets through it. Again, I don't know how you're not playing Ray Estes right now because Coney Durr's not ready. And I feel bad for him to be out there when you're not 100% because he's not. And this defense, just Rob Smith doesn't have a lot of options because of how toasted his secondary is right now with injuries. Now, hopefully, Duke McGee earns his way back onto the field this weekend because if not, I mean, we're looking at Kunle Ayinde transitioning back to cornerback, and I don't know that I really like that. But there's not a whole lot of options because it's either Kunle playing corner or Calvin Swenson getting significant reps at safety. And so this defense is a hurting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But to Derek's point, given the struggles that they've had, the secondary at times looked better, even depleted. I mean, I guess if you're trying to kind of search for some silver linings, I guess from a scheme perspective, they were able to kind of fill it, but yeah, it was a difficult day for the defense. Any other things you guys want to touch on defense before I transition to offense?
Well, I think that, and Derek, you texted this to me last night, and I think the point, I mean, it's worth exploring, is Thomas Barber and Jonathan Celestine are getting gassed because they have to make every flipping play.
Yeah.
Like, the defensive line isn't really helping them out a whole lot. And I mean, you look at like the statistics from Saturday, the leading defensive lineman in tackles was Gary Moore with 3. And then Stephen Richardson with 2, Andrew Stelter with 2. Like if your defensive line or your defensive tackle specifically are only getting 7 total tackles of your 57 on the day, that means your linebackers and your safeties are going to be very sore each and every Sunday morning. And like Celestine, I think is playing at a high level. I think Barber is playing at a high level for the most part. And we'll get into some of the different fallacies and I shouldn't say fallacies, the couple of blown plays that continue to plague this defense. And I guess let's get into it right now is Derek and I talked about it in the pre-production meeting that like the first touchdown of the game is extremely disheartening because no one's on the same page. And by no one, Antonio Chenault on the opposite side of the field, a cornerback, never got the call. And he's in man coverage. Everybody else is in zone coverage. And Kunle Ende thinks that he has someone behind him, so he comes up. And there's no one on that back half of the – there's literally no one on the left half of the field for Minnesota. Well, the tight end leaks out into an easy touchdown. But even if Chenault was there, the issue is there was a crosser from the right slot coming across that would have been wide open too. So there's obviously a blown coverage there. Then on the second Purdue touchdown of the half, Thomas Barber thinks that he's going with the tight end. Jonathan Celestine thinks he's going with the tight end. And I think Barber's the one that should have been with the back. And the back's able to walk in 22 yards for a touchdown. Was Kamal Martin absolutely held out on the edge? Yes. But the point remains that 2 blown coverages, 2 touchdowns. It's like you're watching this defense play well for, you know, 70, 80% of snaps. And then you have these lapses where it's chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, and it just really plagues this defense. Because you look at it, the passing game for Purdue had 8 chunk plays, which is a gain of 15 yards. So they had 8 completions of 15-plus yards, and their running game had 5 of 10-plus. I've been harping for weeks about the Gopher offense to try and find something like that, and for the defense to just not be able to, you know, find some consistency. You know, it is what it is. So, Derek, is there anything else you want to touch on with the defense before we move on?
Yeah, I wanted to add a point about what you talked about, Celestine and Barber having to make so many plays. I mean, it's a spread offense. They're going to have to run all day against an offense like this. But it's a little bit of a house of cards. I think schematically, what you talked about in terms of the secondary injury or depth issues has really forced Minnesota to play back to keep everything in front of them. We've touched on this before, but if you go back and take a look at the free safety for Minnesota in this game. I mean, the drop or even the lineup of the free safety on the snap is ridiculously deep. And I think that's, you know, they want to keep everything in front of them. They want to, against the Purdue offense, they want to give that guy time to diagnose things. What that does is it takes your safety out of run defense. So, or even short pass and catch defense. So, as you mentioned, with the defensive line, if they're not making tackles, then you're putting pressure on your linebackers and safeties. Well, your safeties are many times were pulled out of run and short pass defense because they're playing off, or everybody's playing off. So, I think it's a little bit of a house of cards, and that one thing is putting more pressure on the next, and they're kind of feeling it both ways, and so. That's where I think they've responded well for what it's worth, the linebackers having to make plays. But, you could tell by the end of the game, those guys were, I mean, just running sideline to sideline and you know, just thoroughly exhausted having to run down those short plays.
And the issue is it's not going to get any better anytime soon because Minnesota's best defensive back overall, Antoine Winfield, is out for the foreseeable future. Keandre Thomas, Minnesota's best corner, is out for the foreseeable future. So you're talking about your 2 best players in the secondary. And they're out. And so your hand, which was already shorthanded to begin with, is even shorter. And you're so much more limited in what you can do. So I'm almost getting to the point where I just want to give Rob Smith a reprieve for Big Ten schedule because he doesn't have any bodies. And again, if you don't have any corners or secondary players that you really trust, I mean, how are you going to see the full hand of your defense's capability? I mean, you're not. So, again, the defense, it is what it is. They just don't have a lot of healthy bodies back there.
Well, yeah.
And
I was going to say too, and to that point, like to kind of not to give him a free pass, but you know, to somewhat give him somewhat of a little bit of reprieve is that, you know, they've had opportunities to make plays where they're pretty straightforward plays that are going to change the game, and they just haven't made them, right? There was the Maryland dropped interception. This game, there's another dropped interception, which those are game-changing plays that they just have to make, and they just haven't made them. And
again, he's putting them in situations to make the plays, but they're just not executing.
Yeah.
Now, do Thomas Barber and Jonathan Celestine have to get off more blocks as we continue to get into the Big Ten schedule? Yes, and that starts against a team coming up here that's white hot coming off a Michigan road victory in the Michigan State Spartans. But again, it's not going to get any easier than the first two Big Ten games. Again, let's look at the schedule. I mean, you have Michigan State at home this week. The easiest game remaining is the Fighting Lovie Smiths, but then it's at Iowa, you know, at Michigan, you're talking Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin. I mean, it's not going to get any easier for this defense. So, I mean, it's tough to say they just need to get healthy because it's not going to happen likely anytime soon. But, I mean, this defense in the second half, I mean, they just didn't play well, and they missed too many opportunities, and it's something that they just got to work on with the personnel that they have.
All right, real quick, maybe just a one-word answer from each of you. You know, we have a couple spread teams that we've just played, and obviously this has kind of been the matchup nightmare, but do you feel like this defense can fare better against a power-running team like Michigan State, like Michigan, like Wisconsin, that they'll see later in Big Ten play?
I want to give a 10-second answer before Derek actually gets in the X's and O's, but I am pretty terrified of a power running team.
Same.
Or a more kind of traditional Big Ten team. I shouldn't say just power running team, but just like a traditional Big Ten team coming in this weekend, because Minnesota doesn't have the bodies at defensive end to like combat this. And so I am a little bit nervous. Derek, are you sharing in my thoughts, or do you think something else?
You stole my thunder. I was going to say it's to watch the defensive ends and see how the Gophers scheme against a traditional offense. I think actually they'll fare better. I think that they'll feel less stress on the secondary against a more traditional team. They're going to have to match up at times, and I'm sure Michigan State will take some deep shots to keep them honest. But I think their strength is between the tackles, is inside the box, and I think that's where Michigan wants to play. So I think they'll actually fare better against a traditional team. But, yes, with the caveat of we better watch and see what they do with the defensive end.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit of offense. You know, this now being, game five, maybe arguably Connor Rota's probably maybe worst performance, I guess, in my book. But, you know, he ends up 11 for 25, 101 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. He also had a fumble inside the 30-yard line. You know, running the ball, they definitely were able to do some things, especially on the edge. We saw a little bit more diversity there. We talked about in the pregame or in the preview episode that they had to find a way to get, you know, long dynamic plays. And they were able to do that. You know, Brooks had a 40-yard run. Smith had a 51-yard run. But Derek, you know, at the end of the day, the consistency just wasn't there for the offense. They had some moments and some flashes, but, you know, how do they, I mean, what do they do wrong? Like, what do we do going forward?
Yeah, I think they're just missing balance on offense, frankly. I'm probably sound like a broken record, but I do feel that in order to be hitting on all cylinders on offense, you have to have big plays and you have to have consistency. And we've talked in previous years and previous regimes how they've really developed some nice consistency, but it was just, they just could not manufacture any big plays. Well, Saturday was another case where they did come up with some big plays, but the opposite. They weren't able to establish consistency and consistently move the ball. They did it on a couple drives, but overall weren't able to do it. And so from a schematic perspective, what I'm left with is you know, we've talked about in the previous game, Maryland was plus one in the box on running situations on, I would call it 75-80% of those snaps. And Purdue was the same, if not slightly more. So they were plus one in the box against Minnesota on probably 80-85% of running down and distances. Now, Minnesota did get more diverse in the running game and actually had some success against plus one boxes. with a jet sweep and outside zone. They didn't have success in it with inside zone against a plus one box. But the other part that I think is missing is they have to, probably stating the obvious here, but they have to develop more of a passing threat. It's the number of times that just the sheer number of times or percent of times that they're running into loaded boxes is kind of remarkable. It's just not, you know, I don't know. We can talk about 10 different ways to throw out of a loaded box and all the patterns you can run and the ways you can attack it through the passing game. But anything, I mean, any of those would be, you know, a welcome sight. And I understand they don't want to throw their identity out the window and they don't want to, you know, turn into drop back and throw the ball 80% of the snaps. And they're never going to do that. And I understand that. But I think what they're missing is balance, and that takes away from their consistency, you know, on offense.
Yeah, I mean, Luke, you and I have talked about this endlessly, I think, in the last 10 days, is Minnesota's rushing offense in terms of explosion has been putrid. Now, did they finally get two runs over 20 yards? Yes, and where you had it actually on back-to-back runs.
Right.
Where Shannon goes for 40 and then Rodney goes for 51. But, I mean, let me phrase it this way. So the two running backs on the day had 39 carries for like 204 yards. If we take out those two big runs, what were the remaining, you know, 90-plus percent? It was 37 carries for 113 yards, which is a 3 yard per carry average. Like, they still can't find any chunk plays. Like, you look at the amount of chunk plays that Purdue had in their passing and running game. When you look at Minnesota, they had one passing play over like 16 yards. And that was on a dropped interception that happened to go right into Rashad Steele's arms. And then Connor Rhoda's other biggest completion on the day was 15 yards to Brandon Lingen, where Lingen has to dive and make an extremely athletic play, which, by the way, that's a positive we can talk about, is a healthy Brandon Lingen is an athletic Brandon Lingen. And you saw Minnesota target him more than any other player on Saturday. But, I mean, the point remains, it's just these running backs are just having trouble getting going. And it's because they continue to run into loaded boxes. And Derek, here's one for you. So Coach Fleck talked about how Minnesota in that 3rd and 4 at the end of the game really needed to convert that because, again, they would have been able to drain clock. Well, why are you running zone read into a plus one? There was 8 guys in the box. Minnesota was in a 2 tight end set, so it's plus one. Well, of course you're not going to get 4 yards on inside zone in a plus one box because you haven't all year. Like, why call that play? It's very perplexing, but I guess let's look on the positive side of things again, Derek, because I know it as much as you do. My mentions when Minnesota was running like some pulling action or some jet sweeps to start the game, my mentions blew up that people were thinking that Scirocco was, you know, listening to the podcast and listening to us. So, I mean, that's the positive part of it, is that we saw a lot more jet action. We saw Shannon Brooks have success with that. We saw on the 51-yard run, Minnesota pulled, I think, their right guard and their center across, and then Rodney Smith turned a 2-yard gain into a 51-yard gain because he's really, really freaking talented. But it's still so disheartening to watch these backs 30-plus times a game run into the back of somebody for 3 yards and then just get eviscerated. So, again, this running – I mean, I think the offense was a lot more creative. But, again, I'm sure we'll probably end on this. The signal caller is not helping at all, and that's the issue. But, I mean, Derek, I mean, we talk about it. I mean, at least they're mixing in some jet action, and we are seeing some more pulling linemen to mix up the monotony that is zone.
Yeah, it was both those things were something that they added. I mean, they had showed it just a couple times in all previous games. In this game, it was, you know, I would guess the makeup was probably 50% inside zone and then the other, you know, 50% all the other runs. So it was nice to see that. And it put those, as we've talked about, it put the running backs in space. So they're able to get out, get into space. And I know they got hit, I think, the first jet of the game. They got hit for a loss or kind of stuffed it, but that didn't discourage them. They came back. They found the look they liked to run jet sweep, the personnel and the formation. And they really, that last drive that they moved the ball quite well up until the end that you talked about, it was almost exclusively jet and maybe some outside zone. So they didn't run much inside up until the end. So that's something that, you know, I'm glad they were able to diversify. I think hopefully they'll continue to add to it and just give the defense reason to defend more of the field in the running game.
All right, so let's kind of break down, you know, the reason as to why they are running so much. You know, my hypothesis is that, you know, they one, either don't have confidence in Rota and the receiving game. So I'll state the obvious is they're just being risk averse at this point. This is very much like, you know, early Jerry Kill, and maybe even late Jerry Kill, just let's just not beat ourselves. And this is why we see them have, running into loaded boxes over and over and over again. At this point, it's starting to feel like they're just being stubborn. I don't know, Ryan, would you agree?
Oh, I don't know that stubborn is the right word. Just specifically, if we're going to talk about stubborn, I guess something I'm very stubborn on is the fact that Minnesota had three drives on those turnovers in the first half that started at their own 43-yard line, their own 41-yard line, and the Purdue 37-yard line. And those three drives went punt, fumble, punt. You will not win in the Big Ten on the road if you, on average, take over the ball at midfield and you don't score on three possessions. Like, that's embarrassing. And I said it on Twitter, when Minnesota went into the half with a 14-6 lead, that should have been 24-6. And they should have, you know, again, going into halftime, only down one score for Purdue, opposed to going down three scores at halftime, is a much bigger story for the psyche of everybody in that lot and for both locker rooms. And so the fact that Minnesota goes three and out from their 43, Connor Rota fumbles it away at the 7-yard line for Purdue, and then Minnesota goes five plays, 17 yards, and then punts. By the way, I'm not entirely thrilled about punting from the enemy's territory at the 42-yard line with the wind at your back like there was. So, and again, I think that resulted in a Ryan Santoso touchback on that play. Again, that's incredibly frustrating to me, and that basically is the game for me, is the fact that Minnesota isn't able to score on three drives that were basically handed to them. Like, all you had to do from the 41 and the 43 is go 30 yards and you're in field goal range. Or even 20-25, because the 25-mile-an-hour wind was at your back and Emmett's got a leg on him. And the fact that they weren't able to do that, and again, you can check out the GIF rewind in terms of why, but that is somewhat because Connor Rota refuses to lock onto a receiver who isn't the first read. And so he's missing guys wide open. But the stubbornness of the play calling, you touched on it, Luke, I think just comes down to the fact that Connor Rota is a square peg in a round hole in a run-pass option offense, as I think the statistic is the last two games here in Big Ten play against Maryland and against Purdue, he has carried the ball seven times for 25 yards. And I think he only carried the ball one time for Minnesota this past game.
He didn't record a rushing attempt.
I have him with six attempts, according to the
you're totally right. I just totally missed it. Sorry.
In a couple of those, he was just scrambling to try and get extra yards, which, by the way, watching Rodney Smith in pass pro is a joy, because that kid sells out to try and protect his quarterback as best he can, and he's not afraid to either go low on a guy that's blitzing or try and pop somebody in the mouth to stand him straight up. So that's nice. But, again, I just think that you're limited in what you can do offensively with Connor Rota. There's a reason I was clamoring. And I thought, and I still believe, that Demaryius Croft is much more talented than Connor Rota, but the issue is Demaryius Croft screwed up. And he screwed up off the field, and he's still trying to work his way out of the doghouse. So until he's out of the doghouse, I got to be careful with my words here. It looks like Connor Rota is going to be the one that's starting the games. So, Derek, I mean, what are your thoughts in terms of the, you know, quote-unquote stubbornness of Minnesota's offense at times?
Well, I think that, you know, the way that Purdue played it in the passing game, they did bring a little bit more, mix in a little bit more with their front seven in terms of twists. They brought some blitzes. A few times they had like six or seven defenders locked up where they really only rushed four, but, you know, they wanted to keep the Gophers guessing in terms of who was going to come. So They mixed in some looks of trying to get pressure. They played a lot of man. They did mix in some zone. And so I think a couple things. I think Minnesota handled, you mentioned pass protection, handled the pass protection very well. And even on some of those blitzes and stunts, for whatever reason, I know we talked about it briefly before we started tonight. Connor Rhoda just seemed very, he didn't seem poised in the pocket. He seemed very antsy to, he backpedaled a lot.
Yeah, he's flustered.
We talked about even flustered. Yep. Just didn't seem comfortable in the pocket. And I don't know if it was because he felt that it was maybe a softer pocket. He saw some of those rushes coming, but they were picked up. So, you know, I don't know if they had a knockdown or I don't think they had a sack. And I don't know if they, you know, I don't feel like they got a lot of pressure, but he didn't seem comfortable in the pocket. And I think that hurt him. I think on some of the, we've talked about it in previous episodes this year, Minnesota thrives on long developing passing plays down the field. A lot of long crossing plays, things over the middle. If they're going to throw into man coverage, that's going to be things like drag routes, you know, again, crossing patterns over the middle, scissor routes, things like that. Those take some time to develop, and you have to sit in there and step into your throws and get those throws downfield. And I felt like too many times he was bailing out, you know, or throwing off his back foot and maybe even throwing early or checking down and not sitting in there and throwing downfield. And you know what? If you sit in there and if you take a sack or two, but that allows you to throw four or five more downfield, so be it. I mean, that's a good trade-off. But I think that was – maybe they didn't like what they saw early on and didn't feel like they wanted to come back to you know, maybe that contributed into the stubbornness and just dialing up more runs.
Now, you teed me up perfectly, Derek, for the passing game. And that – watching that film back Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon, I haven't been as frustrated quoting Joe Mauer, Mr. 463, in a long time than watching Connor Rhoda on dropbacks. Because from basically the first pass play to the final one, he was so reluctant to stay in the pocket. He was throwing off his back foot far too often. I would probably say 75% of his throws were thrown off his back foot because he was bailing out on pressure that was never there. And I have no reason, I don't have an explanation for it, because you look at through five games, Connor Rhoda has been sacked one time. One sack through five games, and I would say on 93% of his dropbacks, he hasn't been hit. Or it's probably even further north of that. And for him to just continually bail and just, I mean, to try and give you an example, folks. So it would be a shotgun snap. Connor Rhoda takes two steps back, and where he should stand tall and then step up in the pocket, he would keep going further and further back. And he's screwing his tackles who are trying to watch the end, who's trying to bend the corner. Well, if Connor would just stay in where he's supposed to be instead of continually drifting back, that wouldn't be an issue. And the two tackles would have their guys run into each other. Connor steps up in the pocket, delivers a throw. Well, he's drifting back. So instead of, you know, 4 yards of separation between the quarterback and the tackle, Connor drifted back 4 yards. Well, of course the end's going to get there when all he has to do, because the tackle has no idea where the quarterback is. And he's screwing his offensive line. And it's just so frustrating to watch because he has no explanation for it. You weren't touched basically the entire game. You haven't been touched throughout the first four games of the 2017 season. Why in the first even glimpse of pressure are you bailing out, wincing the throw away, and throwing an inaccurate ball? Like, I had no explanation for it, and it was infuriating to watch back on film. And maybe the thing that has me even more jazzed up is the fact that Connor just is so reluctant to move off his first read, and I have no idea why. It's literally take the snap, lock onto the guy, and you're throwing it whether he's open or not. And he's missing guys that are open. He's missing guys that are wide open. And we're talking about a two wide receiver set at the end of the game that involved Mark Williams. That is not a shot at Mark Williams. That is a shot at Minnesota's receiving core depth because of Brian Anderson. We're talking about Philip Howard, unfortunately, goes out on the first passing play of the game. He gets blindsided. He gets ear-holed by the face mask of the Purdue safety. He's already been ruled out for Michigan State. Demetrius Douglas, Minnesota's former number two wide receiver, is out for the season with a foot injury. I mean, Minnesota doesn't have a lot of bodies there. Yet Matt Simon and Kirk Shiraka have guys that are open. And even if it's the check down, Connor just doesn't look. I mean, he locks onto his first read, refuses to scan the field, and that's how you go 11 of 25 with one of the most horrendous interceptions I've seen in quite some time to win the game. Because Jawan Bentley is sitting there the entire time, and Connor just throws it right to him. And it is what it is. But I also saw some folks complaining about the road to fumble, that Connor shouldn't run. Connor has to run because Minnesota tried to work in speed option for another, option for Minnesota to kind of work the edge. He just doesn't secure the ball. And again, that's on him. And now we're to the point where through five games, Connor Rota has four turnovers within the opponent's 30-yard lines. That is a gigantic red flag for a staff that's mantra on the offensive side of the ball is the ball is the program. Four turnovers in five games within the opponent's 30 is not going to win you any fans. And in terms of not like Gopher fans, in terms of just play on the coaching staff and with your players. And it's an issue. And if it continues to rear its ugly head against Michigan State, which is a Michigan State squad that has played extremely well, they're 4-1, they just beat Michigan. I mean, at what point, especially if Minnesota isn't able to take care of business at home, at what point do we just say, what's the point of starting a fifth-year starting quarterback who threw two Big Ten games, has more turnovers than touchdowns, is completing less than 50% of his passes? I mean, what are we gaining, especially since he's not an option in the read option game? So, Derek, what did you see specifically on the reads that Connor Rota was making? Because, again, to me, it just looks like I'm going to take the snap, I'm going to lock onto the guy, and I'm going to throw it whether he is open or not, and we're going to just see how the dice lays.
Yeah, I think we talked about it previous podcast. He makes some nice throws downfield and in some tight windows. He's able to push the ball upfield at times. And prior to this game, he had shown good poise to wait for those routes downfield to develop and wait for the receivers to get open. But he has struggled this year on his pre and post snap reads. I mean, that's half of the diagnosis for a quarterback is reading pre and post snap. And I think if you see more man coverage, like they did see a little bit more against Purdue, that also forces you to throw into guys that are not typically wide open. You know, when you're facing a zone, you look for those pockets in the zone. And I think you throw with a little bit more confidence if you see those windows open up in the zone and you can really let it, unleash the ball and know that you're going to hit that guy if he's on his route and runs the right way, you're going to hit him. Where in man coverage, especially those times that he broke contain and sort of rolled out, if you look at the wide angle and look, there are no receivers, quote unquote, wide open on some of those. You just have to settle in, put your, step in the throw and throw it to your receiver that you want, the guy that you go through your reads and find the guy that has the best look. And I do think you're right on some of those plays, especially some of the quicker throws, like unfortunately the pick six at the end of the game. I think he was locked in and knew he wanted to take the snap, and he had a couple seconds to draw back, and he saw the look that he wanted and unfortunately didn't see the linebacker, and so stepped into that and threw it right away and didn't make a progression, just locked onto him from the beginning and tried to throw it in there. So I think that's something they have to work on with him, is again go through the pre and post snap reads, and if nothing else, give him the confidence that he has the protection to do it. I mean, it would be different if we were talking about 2-3 years ago where they just didn't have the pass protection to be able to go through a progression, and you were throwing things like hitches and outs and timing patterns on the outside that you really weren't looking at anything else, but he does have time. The pass blocking is there. Even from the running backs, the blitz pickup and everything looks good. So give him they got to give him the confidence to sit in there and hit his second or third read on some of these.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know how it changes, because again, it's not like it's progressing in the right direction. We could look from Maryland to Purdue. He regressed, in my opinion, in the passing game. Now, instead of the Connor Rota bashing hour, did he do some good things?
Sure.
I mean, he sold the hell out of that Brandon Lingan touchdown where he kept the ball on his right hip, turned it, had a guy right in his face, delivered an accurate ball. He put a beautiful 50-50 ball on the sideline to Tyler Johnson, who has to come down with that. Because it seemingly at every time Minnesota's within their 10-yard line, by the way, if I'm noticing this, that means definitely opposing defensive coordinators are knowing this, that Minnesota loves to take a deep shot. And the issue is they haven't had any success there outside of one ball. I think Minnesota's like 1-for-7 or 1-for-8 on deep go routes on the sideline, and that percentage needs to get going in the positive direction for Minnesota. It's just at this point, I mean, we're talking about a Minnesota team that looks like they're not trending in the right direction. And again, I'll ask the question, how much longer, I mean, are we going to be looking at Connor Rota running this offense? Now, is he a great leader and everybody respects him? Sure. But that's great and all. But Coach Fleck is going to be ultimately decided upon by his wins and losses. And so are you going to continue to throw out the fifth-year senior who didn't beat out Mitch Leidner for 3 years, and instead of someone like Demry Croft, who if and when he is out of the doghouse, which your guess is as good as mine at this point. You know, maybe it's this weekend against Michigan State. Maybe it's against Illinois. Maybe it's against Iowa. But if this season continues to trend southward and trademark the Paul Allen show on KFAN, it goes pear-shaped, well, what's the point of starting Connor Rota anymore if the results aren't there statistically? He's a square peg in a round hole in this offense. You know what? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but again, maybe he comes out against Michigan State, you know, and we're looking at a prolific passing attack of the likes we haven't seen in quite some time. But Derek, we've talked about on end how the deep play action game is one of the ways to combat these stack boxes where the defense is plus one or heaven forbid plus two. You look at Minnesota's passing plays over 15 yards that were completed. One was exactly at 15, and that was Brandon Lingan's diving catch. And the other one should have been an interception, but the Purdue guy mistimed his jump, hits off his hands, and he still is able to corral it. Like, those are the two completions over 15 yards. So if things continue to trend the way they are, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but I mean, at what point do you just pull the plug here? Derek, you can take it first if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I don't know that I could have much to add beyond just you have to take it. I know that the head coach has talked about having a guy that's ready to lead the team, and they feel that they're making the decision right now based on who they feel can lead the team. As things progress, I would like to, if nothing else, I would like to see them attempt to be a little bit more dynamic and find out, what the potential is. You know, we don't see practices. I don't see practices. So I haven't seen all the snaps that the coaches have. So dealing with, a smaller sample size. But, I think they should press a little bit and see where maybe, like you said, maybe they can find something that works well for him that they didn't think maybe was there. You know, maybe they're not giving him the opportunity on some of the, whether it be certain formation, play set, type of passing that they can try in a game situation and get a little bit less conservative and try and push the envelope. And again, I think at that point, then you can say you tried, I'm not going to say try it at all, but you can say you've given it your shot. And I think at that point you move on. As of right now, they're handcuffed a bit. I talked a little bit about, they're a little bit unbalanced. I think they feel that they're, doing what they can do and not trying to do too much, but they might want to press a little bit and see what they have. And, if they don't have what's needed, then they might have to turn the page and try something else.
I think if you're being really logical about this situation, trying to come a little bit from maybe from Fleck's perspective, but, this is a function of, one, a coaching transition, and you don't necessarily, you know, the coach doesn't have his players, and at this point, to me, it looks like they haven't really tried to fit the scheme to what they have. But, you know, just as a team construct, like, you know, things have fallen apart. You know, Demery obviously made some sort of bad decision, and Fleck stood to his morals and has stuck with that and feels like the only route he has to go is Connor Rota. Now, like it or not, I don't necessarily disagree with him and his approach. I think this is a function of basically changing regimes, and we had to see that this was possible and even maybe probable in some respects, especially when you have the quarterback attrition that the Gophers have had over the years, and their inability to really identify a quarterback. You know, really, I guess from my opinion, outside of Philip Nelson, like, who did they really identify as a, well, I guess Mitch to a certain extent, but they really weren't able to identify quarterback talent, and that's part of the reason that Fleck is here. And so in terms of, I guess from my perspective, from an investment, at this point, you know, you need to invest in your future, and I think it's probably best to see if there's someone you can ride outside of Rota, because at this point, you know, a fifth year senior that's not going to be around, you might as well get somebody reps. I guess that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and again, we'll see what Michigan State looks like. Does he have a great opportunity to change his best? You're gosh darn right, and I hope he does, and I hope Minnesota is able to win against Michigan State at home this weekend, 7 p.m. kickoff, and I believe BTN. So tune into that. But again, if Demery Croft is available, I just don't know how you don't give him a chance, especially if the offense continues to sputter as much as they have. Like, the latest advanced analytics statistical profile came out on Football Study Hall. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you know that Luke and I love to reference that. And you look at Minnesota offensively, they are bottom 10 in and of all 128 FBS teams in explosiveness. Do they have a couple of explosive plays a game? Yes, but that is, just to put it in perspective, again, they're 118th out of 128 FBS teams with how explosive they are on the offensive side of the ball. And it gets even worse when you look at them rushing. Again, I talked about it. Yes, they had two big carries in the day, but the other 37 went for, on average, 3 yards. And if you look at that once again via chunk plays, they had one other run over 15 yards in the day out of 39 attempts from two of the most talented running backs in the Big Ten. Help your offense help itself. Get these two into space and see what happens. So, all right, I don't know, boys.
I got one more positive. I was actually pretty impressed with the Emmett Carpenter game, or the go-ahead field goal, you know, given the conditions, and, you know, from his perspective, maybe even a confidence, this could be a confidence boost for him, but that's not an easy kick to make. Really tough footing, tough situation, and he banged it true. So that's a positive in my book.
It is. You know, Minnesota didn't kick one out of bounds. Emmett Carpenter kicks a field goal on a very slippery field. I don't really know what the deal was in the first punt of the game where it went 11 yards, because Minnesota tries to rugby style it,
yeah,
and it goes 11 yards, so that wasn't good.
I think that probably ends the punting battle, right, that you talked about in the preseason. That's probably got to end
it. Yeah, Santoso for the rest of the day, because some of it was in the wind, but he has a 38 average. You know, punt returning, Minnesota hasn't had a threat back there all year. And again, it's just, you know, it's tough to dwell on a lot of positives from a game like that just because of the way it ended. The way that Minnesota for the second straight game has had opportunities to win it in the end, and they haven't made plays specifically on defense. And especially now that you're looking at a very, very depleted secondary, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to look at the remaining Big Ten games and find, you know, three wins. But again, I think it's still possible. I know, call me crazy, call me whatever you want. I'm looking through maroon and gold glasses. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I still think you win Illinois. And then when you look at the remaining schedule, I still think they have shots against teams like Nebraska, Northwestern, I think Iowa's going to, even though Minnesota hasn't won there in 15 plus years. Again, you're going to need to win Illinois and Nebraska, two home games, and then beat Northwestern on the road, which I think is doable, to get to six wins. I don't know that seven's a possibility anymore. But again, this is a week by week team because it is college football. So again, maybe this team comes out against Michigan State and plays much better because they're at home. They get Duke McGee back. They find something in a number two receiver. We'll have to see. But there is still a lot of season left, and there's a lot of opportunities for Minnesota to change their best and still come out with a bowl game.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll I don't know. We'll keep rowing the boat as well.
We will still be here back on Thursday night to preview a Michigan State game.
Yes.
I know that we sounded all doom and gloom, folks, but just not a whole lot of positive vibes coming out of that game, especially with the weird delay for an hour. But, again, team's got a great opportunity to change their best against Michigan State. They have a 2:30 kickoff for Illinois coming up on homecoming, which they should be in a very winnable game there. There is still wins on the schedule left. And trust me, if you are one of those people who are either tweeting me or on the message board saying that Fleck needs to be fired after five games, reevaluate your life, man. Just reevaluate your sports takes because, I mean, give the man more than five games. You look at the three most important positions in my mind in football, the ones that are always valued so highly when you watch something like the NFL draft. That is quarterback, that is an edge rusher, and that is cornerback, and edge rushing. Quarterback recruiting has been abysmal for a decade. Now, can Brennan Armstrong change that? Can Tanner Morgan change that? Yes. Does Hank Bachmeier potentially have the opportunity to really change that? Yes. They need to find edge pressure because they need some help outside of Carter Coughlin. They have two guys that they're redshirting, Boye Mafe and Eze Owatumu. They have potential here a year or two down the line. And then you look at specifically at the cornerback position, Minnesota is decimated. They've been decimated for about 10 months. Does this secondary look a whole lot different with Keontae Harden, with Ray Buford, and then Keandre Thomas in the slot? Hell yeah, it does. But the issue is two of them were expelled because they didn't do what they needed to do off the field. And then Keandre's hurt. So now we're looking at no depth, and we're looking at no depth anywhere in the secondary. So Minnesota's struggling in some of the most key positions in football, some of the most important positions, and that's going to take time to address, and that's being addressed via recruiting. They have the highest recruiting ranking they've had in, I think, this decade, and it's only probably going to get better in 2019 where, again, they could potentially get off to a very good start with Hank Bachmeier. So don't get out of the boat yet. Let's see what it looks like in 2019. Let's see what it looks like more specifically in 2020 when you have quarterback talent on the roster that's not just a true freshman. So don't get out of the boat yet.